From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the early 1970s. That was the time when the term business ethics came into common use in the United States. And by the mid-1980s, there were more than 500 high school and college courses in business ethics. The Society for Business Ethics was started in 1980. Well, the Rochester Business Ethics Award program was started in 2003, largely modeled after the American Business Ethics Award. And now we have the Ethies. That leads us to today's program. Last week, the annual Ethie Awards were handed out, honoring ethical business practices. We have some of the finalists. We're going to discuss the winners. And perhaps most importantly, we'll find out what the standards are for choosing these finalists and winners. And you can join the conversation this hour. We'd love to hear from you. What are the most important attributes in your mind for an ethical business? Joining me in studio, Alan Ziegler of the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation. Alan, great to see you here.
Thank you, Evan.
Dom Geneva from Genesee Valley Motors. Yes, indeed, a car dealer. Hi, Dom.
Good seeing you again.
Bill Pollack, the CEO of Optimation Technologies here. Bill, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Dom, can anybody believe that a car dealer won an Ethie?
It just opens the door to so many other businesses. You have no idea. I mean, once you elect a car dealer into this, no telling what's going to happen next year.
When so you started Genesee Valley Motors, when, Dom?
In 1994, I was a factory rep for Chrysler, 17 years, realized my career is not going where I want my career to go. And my wife and I literally sold everything we had but the furniture to start the business in Avon. It was a little empty building, a little wooden building, and we started off with like 6 employees. And it's been okay.
It's done okay.
Yeah, it's done all right.
Well,
yeah.
And you know, I've been joking with people in the office today. I've got to make sure this isn't an hour-long ad. But at the same time, I think it's important.
You know me ever too well.
Well, no, not at all. I'm not accusing you. I'm talking about the host duty. But I do think there are important questions here. Uh-huh. And Dom, I'm curious to know, 20 years ago when you're launching, how cognizant are you of the reputation of car dealers, which is either fair or unfair, but how cognizant were you?
Oh, very cognizant. I was a factory rep for Chrysler, calling on dealers and ordering cars with them and selling them the programs and whatever. So I probably called on 400, 450 dealers in my career. And I saw this vast spectrum of dealers. Now, there are a lot of dealers that operate still like it was 1965, 1970, and they are only into it for the money and to get what they can from you today. It's like any other business. But what I noticed is that there were a lot of dealers that I called on that were really good ethical business people. They cared about their customers. They looked at their customers as a renewable resource. And the great thing about those dealers is that those customers stuck with them in the bad times. I mean, I worked for Chrysler Corporation. We had some pretty challenging times in the late 70s, early 80s with the loan guarantees and whatever. And it was those dealers that had the longevity with their customers. Their customers would buy the cars from these dealers, even when the cars are stalling in the middle of intersections, and they're still buying cars from these dealers. And that's what I wanted to model our dealership after. Nita and I were not in this for the money. We just wanted to have a good, sustainable customer base where we could go to the diner in the morning and a customer's happy to see us rather than coming up to us and complaining about something.
Complete a transaction with a customer and they feel like it was a blood sport.
Right.
They're not going to come back to you, are they?
Right. It has to do with sustainability. I mean, I have an expression I use at the dealership. We sell apples, not firewood. Okay? I mean, you want this to be a renewable resource. And people, it's amazing how people, human nature is. They can tell. They can tell if you have a sales process and your people are faking it or people really care about people. And it might sound a little bit corny, but I have this other expression at the dealership. We take care of each other. We take care of the employees. The employees take care of us. We take care of our customers. You try to make everybody happy. You can't make everybody happy, but you try your best to make everybody happy. And after 20 years, I mean, it really works out well. I mean, we had our first grandkid buy a car from us this year. I mean, the mother... the grandmother bought a car for me in 94 and 95, and then her daughter bought a car for me, and now her daughter bought a car. That's great. I mean, it's the holy grail of selling things when you have sustainability like that. So
we're talking about business ethics and the Ethie Awards this year. If you want to join the conversation, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We're right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. At Evan Dawson on Twitter. where Mary is already asking me if an auto dealer is willing to disclose some of the secrets of the industry that might not be ethical. We'll ask Dom that as we are progresses, if that's all right with you, Dom.
I have a perfect answer for that.
Okay, well, we'll get to that coming up here. Let me ask Bill Pollack from Optimation Technology. People are going to be a little bit more familiar with what a car dealer does. If they don't know Optimation, what do you do, Bill?
Well, we design and build industrial manufacturing facilities. So we think we're all about manufacturing, and our objective and goal is to rebuild and sustain the manufacturing infrastructure in the United States. So we have a group of engineers, that'll be mechanical, chemical, process, and we have then tradespeople, welders, pipe fitters, electricians. And if you want to make glass or paper or pharmaceuticals or implanted body devices, whatever it is you want to make, people come to us, and then we design the factory, build it, and then maintain it for them.
Your company was founded when?
1985.
And you're located where?
Well, we have our corporate in Rush, and then we have our 200,000 square foot manufacturing site in Greece, and then we have 10 field offices around the country.
How many employees now?
About 400.
And what did you start with in 1985?
We started with one. Sometimes when you start, there's just one, and I used to go out and tell people what a great company it was, and then they would say, and how many people work there? And then I'd say, well, right now it's just me, and then they'd say, it's nice to meet you, and out the door you went.
You're looking at the employees, you used to say, right? But in 1985, you start a company that's going to be getting into manufacturing, and Kodak was employing
60,000.
The big three was rocking. Manufacturing was sort of viewed as a core, and now, you know, everybody tells us, Bill, that manufacturing is not dead yet, but it is just a very different landscape than 30 years ago.
It is a very, very different landscape. In fact, you're correct. All those large companies like Kodak or Xerox or 3M or Corning were very, very vertically integrated. So they didn't subcontract out any of the design or the fabrication. They would do it themselves. And they thought it wasn't any good if they didn't sell. But I could see just this glimmer of that starting to change. And back then, engineering firms were mostly doing buildings and bridges and roads and infrastructure of some sort or another. There wasn't anybody doing industrial. So we were trying to be, you know, on the forefront of where that was. And little by little, of course, it swung the other way. Now we have, if we look at our relationship with Kodak, it's a fantastic relationship with Kodak, but we're doing a great deal of the maintenance and the design for them. In fact, 8 years ago, we purchased from Kodak their construction, maintenance, and engineering divisions and took over all of that from them, and they got rid of doing it themselves and outsourced. So, yeah, you're right. The landscape has changed an incredible amount.
We're talking to Bill Pollack from Optimation Technology, the CEO, Dom Genova from Genesee Valley Motors and Avon, and Alan Ziegler's here from the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation. Just handed out the Ethi Awards. You're hearing from two of the companies involved. And Alan, we already have a comment on Twitter. Carol says, awards that are subjectively given out by a panel of judges. She's offering a little bit of a cynical take on the notion of ethical business awards. But why don't you give us a bit of a framework? And I already see calls coming in. We're going to get to your phone calls in a moment. Give us a framework for how the foundation chooses finalists for these awards.
Well, we think it's anything but subjective because we have a serious entry process, which is very thorough. I think both these gentlemen would suggest it takes a significant amount of their and their employees' time to complete it. We look at four broad areas. Number one, we want to know what the commitment to business ethics by the organizational leader is, and we ask them to describe how do they demonstrate that to their employees. And how's the commitment passed down to employees so that everyone knows. We want to know about their organization's ethics program. How does it operate in practice? Give us some examples of ethical dilemmas you face and how you resolve them. And dealing with ethical challenges across all their operation. And we also want to know their demonstration of ethical commitment to their stakeholders, which includes, as Dom suggested, customers and employees, vendors, shareholders, the community, et cetera. So those are the four broad areas. We ask for them to complete each of those four areas with a no more than 250-word essay, and then an additional 250 words as an example, if they want to give us examples of those behaviors. And then the judges meet and make an initial decision about who should be in the finalist pool, and we then do a site visit at each company where we go out and we talk to the people who prepared the application, In my mind, the most important part of that visit is talking to someone who didn't prepare the application, a line worker, one of the regular a factory employee at Bill's Place, for example, and ask them, were you aware of the ethics program? Have you ever been impacted by it? So that we try to verify that, in fact, this is a company-wide program. It's not just the CEO writing some nice essays.
And let me do my due diligence. There's two questions here. First of all, don't all companies think they behave ethically? And second of all, if you're interviewing an employee on site, don't they have an incentive to tell you everything is great?
I haven't found that.
Have you found employees who kind of scratch their head a little and warn you?
Yes, I've done.
I've
done some site visits. I don't think anyone has ever suggested they weren't ethical, but some of them have been honest about the fact, well, I wasn't very familiar with our ethics program. So there's some prejudice there, I'm sure. And I think you're absolutely right. Nobody would say I'm unethical. But we hope that this process forces them to prove they're ethical. What in fact are you doing? What are your processes? What are your procedures that help produce ethical behavior at your company?
We're going to talk about some more of the names and faces and businesses that are on this year's list. Let's grab our first call. This is Keith in Farmington. Keith, thanks for calling Connections.
Evan, how you doing?
Good.
Interesting show, but as much as the guy tried to explain everything just now on how it's done, I would have to agree with the Twitter person. It does sound somewhat subjective. But this is more towards the car dealer. I think the average consumer now can go into a car dealer with way more knowledge than they used to have years ago to see if they're getting a relatively good deal. So you could have a car dealer can make claims and people could verify it, and if it's verifiable, well, to me, the car dealer is extremely ethical. I mean, there's one dealer who was giving away cruises and TVs, and, you know, there's probably somebody out there who actually thinks they're getting it for free.
Yeah.
Is that ethical? I don't know, but I'm a small business owner. I've owned the business since 1977, and most businesses, I can't think of any that don't, they survive on referrals and past customers. So that goes across the whole business. And the other thing is, you're only as good as your worst employee. So I don't care how good your 99% of the people are, but if you got that 1% that sucks, that's what everybody's going to remember, and that's what they're going to tell the other people. And then for ethics, basically, I just don't screw people. I give them a call.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good start. Yeah,
that's a good start.
Keith, thanks for the call. Let's let Dom. And Keith raises the point that we've got more information as customers now than we used to. First of all, yes or no?
Ah, but you're missing so much information. To the point of the person before
Keith,
who was talking about how do you know or whatever. A lot of it has to do with how proactive you are as a business owner and as an individual. Now, yes, there's a lot of information you can get on the internet, but there's also stuff that you don't know. There's tricks of the trade that you may not be aware of.
All right, now, Dom, open the floodgates.
Okay,
go ahead.
You can go to GenesseeValley.com. Okay, GenesseeValley.com, which is my site. I'm not trying to sell you something here. I have a car buying IQ test that I came up with myself. Okay, you probably don't know what a delivery bump is. You probably don't know why a dealer can advertise zero down on a lease, but it doesn't mean zero money out of your pocket. The guys that say push, pull, or drag, how do they do that? How does somebody guarantee you $3,500 for your trade if your trade is worthless? And there's subtle differences in the way that the cars are marketed. We had a dealer at one point in time that was advertising on TV, your payment is $299 on this Grand Cherokee, $299. Well, it was your payment, but it wasn't your monthly payment. It was a biweekly payment. So the payment was really $600 a month. So you can see my car buying IQ test. Now, in the spirit of no nonsense, in the spirit of ethics, if you get 100% on the test, we will mail you a gift. We mail you a roadside kit. We're going to change that to jump drives. So you educate yourself about the business with things that other dealers are going to tell you. Plus, on my website, same website, there's a blog. And the blog, and I write blog articles once a month, maybe twice a month, and it will educate you about how to buy a car, because this is my feeling about cars. Cars are like shoes. I mean, they got to be comfortable, they got to be affordable, they got to be a style you like. You can't return them very easily, just like shoes. And me putting you into the wrong pair of shoes isn't good for you, and it's not good for me. And if you go out and you buy, honest and truly, if you go out and buy a Buick, I don't sell new Buicks. If you go out and buy a new Buick and that's the right vehicle for you, well, fine. That's fine. And I think that's where ethics come in. Can you do something proactively that may actually end up costing you money, but is the right thing to do?
Okay, so on this point, you mentioned, how can a dealer guarantee $3,500 in trade for a car? Give me an example of what we don't know about.
Well, there are a couple of things. One, you're including the markup in the car. Two, you're including the rebates. And sometimes when they say all rebates apply, you can't, you cannot actually get all those rebates. I'll give you an example. There was a dealer that was advertising you had to be in the military, a recent college grad. You had to be a former lessee and have a current vehicle with that manufacturer's brand. And surprising as it is, you had to have bought a farm tractor, a case tractor, in the last year. All rebates apply. So you add all of those rebates up, which is probably $7,000 or $8,000 worth of rebates, and you can only qualify for half of them. They're rolling that into what they're saying they're giving you for your trade, and they're not really giving you that for your trade in.
So you're not actually getting $3,500.
No, you're really not getting, because it says all rebates apply. They hide behind, some dealers hide behind these. I'm not saying all dealers. I'm saying there's some dealers that are unethical and do this. And the more that you know, it's like Cy Sims said years ago, an educated consumer is our best customer. That's what I feel. An educated consumer is our best customer, the person that knows difference. There's one thing that some of the dealers do is they put an indented window sticker on your car. The window sticker on your car is called a Monroney sticker, and that was a bill by Senator Monroney in the 50s, because the cars didn't have a sticker on them and nobody knew this car had this equipment, that car had that equipment. They put a sticker on the car where they're putting high markup stuff on your car. Okay, so let's say, for instance, paint sealant. Paint sealant costs the dealer pennies, and then he puts paint sealant for, you know, $500-$700 on the window sticker of the car. Well, he can discount his car by an extra $500 or $700 because he put something on his car that only cost him $35. So I'm on my showroom floor, and I have to educate a customer that if you go to a dealer that has a dented window sticker, is that stuff really worth it? I mean, is the mud flaps and the paint sealant and the fabric protectant actually worth $999, or is it not? So those are the things that I look at as a dealer, as a businessman, that I like to do. I like to educate people.
Does that reduce your margins, Dom?
It reduces the ability for me to get golf games with other dealers. That's what it does.
Okay.
I don't get it.
But your margin has got to be smaller, and you've got to sell more, a higher volume at lower margin.
We collect customers. Our whole philosophy has been to maximize the number of customers and the amount of repeat business we get from customers, rather than the philosophy that a lot of dealers do.
Make the most on each customer.
Right. Okay. Right, like our salespeople are non-commissioned.
All right, two more quick questions on this, because they've already come in. You mentioned the question of a cruise. Is the cost of a cruise rolled into the cost of a car in the case that you're talking
about?
Listen
to the ad carefully. When the dealer says such and such is included, it's included. I can include the meds for your meds for your pet. I can include anything. I can include the curtains for your house and the price of your car if I really wanted to. But it's included. There's a difference between included and free.
Right. Included is not free. So if it's a $20,000 car and it's a $3,000 cruise, a $23,000 car with a free cruise is not actually a free cruise, is the point you're making.
Well, and the other thing that people need to understand, the car is an equation. Okay, it's you're buying the car, and everybody concentrates on what they're buying the car for, but it's also your trade-in, because most people have a trade-in, and your financing. So I can juggle these numbers any way I want to make them look any way that I want. I mean, I can give you the lowest price in the world if I undervalue your trade. So you need to be aware of your trade. You need to be aware of how good your credit is, and you need to do some research. And that's what I encourage people to do.
And Jim on Twitter asks about another dealer offers oil changes for life and pizza for a year. Is that included in the cost?
It usually is. Let me tell you my own experience. I don't want to talk about another dealer. I had somebody come in to me a couple of years ago. They said, we're going to give you, and I'll tell you exactly what it was. It was free tires for life. Okay, we have a program where we're going to sign up your dealership into free tires for life. And this is what you have to do. What you have to do is you have to take your maintenance schedule. You have to put a couple of more maintenances in there that the customer may or may not really need. And then you have to bump the price of your service by 3 or 5%. And you run the numbers, and 20% of the people are going to need tires 5 years from now, and you have this reserve fund all set up to give away the free tires. I'm not talking about any other dealer other than what I was presented with. I didn't want to do that. I mean, I have a federal trademark on your no-nonsense car dealer. I would rather not do that. I'd rather give you a fair price for fair service, not tell you you have to come in for more service than you need to, not have to hassle with the whole thing. This is it. This is the way I operate.
Alan?
I just wanted to comment to Keith that Keith, as the owner and founder of a more than 40-year-old business, why don't you go to our website, rochesterbusinessethics.com, and apply for the ETHI, and then make your judgment about whether this is a subjective or fair process.
Okay, and again, the website is, Alan?
rochesterbusinessethics.com.
So we're hearing a lot of interesting questions about the way businesses operate here, and I want to read, if I could, an email that I got this morning in anticipation of this show that takes us in a little bit of a different direction, but I think it's an interesting question. And it was an email from a CEO who I had interviewed a couple years ago in my past life as a television news reporter, and he asked me not to use his name, but he says, "But please ask about what I consider to be the most important ethical practice for a business in 2014, healthcare for employees. I don't mean to make this all political, but let me say that when I started my company more than 30 years ago, I was committed to healthcare for employees. That has never changed. You work for me, you're going to work full-time, you're going to get healthcare. These days, so many companies are trying to force full-time workers into part-time hours just so they don't have to pick up the benefits. And guess what? We don't have to like Obamacare, but my feeling is that if more companies behaved ethically, we might never have needed it. It's shameful to see the part-time hours over the past 10 years increasing as they have." Where do we start with this? That's an interesting question. Bill, let me ask you. Bill Pollack from Optimation. What do you think of that comment there?
Well, I think it's probably a very, very valid comment, and we do hear this a lot, that there's this company, that company, who are cutting hours and moving people out. I mean, at Optimation, you know, we are committed to healthcare, and we spend a lot of time looking at every possible option, because the price of healthcare keeps going higher and higher and higher, and we can't afford, you know, to double and triple what we pay out for healthcare premiums. So we have to go to different plans, different programs, look at different deductibles, look at what creative ways are for us to be able to provide, you know, good healthcare for the employees, but at the same time not put ourselves out of business while we're trying to do it.
And how much more difficult is it today versus when you started, when you really started piling up employees?
When we started piling up employees, everybody was community rated in Rochester, and it was pretty much cut and dried. You knew what it was going to cost. You put that in your budget, and we all shared in the cost universally, and life was good. But then little by little, Rochester, we were the only ones who were community rated back then, but little by little, the rest of the world has caught up with us. And now the price of healthcare in Rochester is higher and higher, and so we have to look at more and more different options in order to try to be able to continually provide that.
But do you agree with the critique from this CEO who emailed me this morning to say that he sees other companies forcing what are essentially full-time employees into 32 hours, no benefits, and all of a sudden they end up working 40 hours anyway, but they're still part-time?
And I do agree with that, but I'm not saying that we couldn't do that, but I do think that tends to be in industries or companies where the employees are more of a commodity. It's easier to replace them. When you're a business like ours, where highly skilled engineers or higher skilled tradespeople are really hard to come by, you don't want to force them into anything or you won't have any employees.
Okay.
And so you could say we're forced to be ethical. I don't think that's really the case. We want to do the best for our employees, and we want to be a big family, and we want to support each other. But I agree with you that there are places they do it, but there's places where it's easier to do it.
It's easier for them to do it, lower skilled jobs, et cetera.
Sure.
You're saying with Optimation, I think you're at least modestly saying that you don't have to worry about that. You have highly skilled workers. You want them to stay. They're going to get benefits. Dom Genova, what do you think about that comment from the CEO?
I think the concept of purposely manipulating pay plans and hours in an effort to save paying somebody is unethical. I am the same way. I'm not in that position. The only part-time people we have are the people that go and they pick up cars and do dealer trades for us a couple hours a week or whatever. But if you're faced with doing a purely financial pay plan for somebody to get underneath the underneath a healthcare law or something, no, that's just not right. I mean, if you talk about taking care of your employees and your employees taking care of you, that's not right.
What's the challenge in providing healthcare now versus when you started 20 years ago?
Well, it's just the raw cost. I mean, we pay most of the healthcare costs for an employee, a vast majority of what their fee is, but the cost is going up and up and up and up, as we all know. I mean, it's a real challenge to business. And I think that one of the big problems that we have is that we really don't know, come January, when all this stuff kicks in, what expenses we're actually talking about. And I think that's where a lot of the fear and the trepidation comes on the part of businesses, is that it's so confusing. I mean, how many pages is the law? I mean, and we just don't know. And as business people, one of the headwinds we have is uncertainty. That's why the recession has taken so long to have its recovery, and that's why people have been hesitant about putting money back into their businesses and so forth. It's just the uncertainty of it all.
There's one more thing, Evan, that I would say about the healthcare at Optimation. I mean, you mentioned the 32-hour rule. It's been our longstanding policy that employees can work full-time or less than full-time or set their own hours if they're moms or somebody growing up, because we want to be able to have continuous employment when they go through different cycles of their life. Our policy has always been to provide full benefits to people who work at least 20 hours. So we've bent far below what's the federal mandate in order to accommodate keeping our employees provided for.
I want to make a comment about that, Evan. In 2003, I had the privilege as the national president of the Society of FSP to give the American Business Ethics Award to a car dealer from Nashville, major car dealer with many branches. And I remember in his acceptance remarks, he said that when he first took over, customers were his focus. That was the current mantra. And it doubled his business by making that shift. And then he learned that making employees his focus would be even more profitable. And it was. His business quadrupled. And as Dom said earlier, if you take care of your employees, they take care of your customers. What Bill Pollack has just said is if you take care of your employees who are highly skilled, they stay with you. And companies that get their profits on the backs of their employees by cutting their hours, taking away their health care, are not going to have a long-term sustainable business. And that's why ethical culture in a business is profitable.
Let's take the shortest break in radio, and we're going to come back with your phone calls. So if you're waiting on the line, you're next here on Connections as we talk about the ETHES, the Rochester Business Ethics Award program here that was started in 2003. The ETHES handed out last week. And we have Dom Genova from Genesee Valley Motors, Bill Pollack, the CEO of Optimation Technology, and Alan Ziegler of the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation talking about what makes for an ethical American company. The discussion continues next on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Connections. This is Bernard in Fairport. Bernard, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I guess my question is, I appreciate the fact that you folks have been given this reward for ethics, but how big a problem is this? And maybe what you really need to have is a program that gives, if you will, awards for unethics. It just seems to me that ethics is, you know, fundamental in business. So is this becoming an issue? And I guess one of the examples that you might want to address is, you know, General Motors not telling people that their switches could cause their death. So is our business culture changing? Is this become a big problem? You know, how important or, you know, how concerned should I be about unethics in business? Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bernard. Let me start with Alan.
Bernard, I would say you ought to pay a lot of attention to that. And to your point about an award for unethical behavior, unfortunately, those awards are given out in your newspaper every single day. You read about companies that have been unethical, have ethical lapses, and it's I think it's sort of an epidemic. So I think absolutely we need a program that helps people understand the value of an ethical culture at their business, which isn't just a feel-good award. It isn't just something that's going to make you feel good. We're thrilled that Dom Genova was tickled pink with his award, but it's bigger than that. It helps his business. One of our former award winners has talked about the fact that the pride his employees get from seeing that banner in their waiting room, knowing that they have been awarded an Effie for their ethical culture, is huge. And it helps him keep employees, which is going to help him continue to be a profitable and successful company.
Well, and look, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say here that Dom would be out of business if you couldn't make money operating in a certain way. But the hope is that, first of all, if a customer went to Dom Genova after all of this and felt like they were hoodwinked, you'd be in real trouble, not just with that customer, but right. I think the word would spread. And now the goal I think that Alan has been talking about is if you create a model that rewards truly sort of exemplary ethical behavior, it encourages other businesses not just to follow it for the altruism, but because it might be good business practice. You might make more money doing it.
Exactly.
Right. It proves that it can be done. I mean, that's the thing. And what you need to look at, and to the caller's point, a very good point, but it depends what business you're in, too. I mean, there are some businesses where you can be on the margins of ethics or even be unethical and still be very profitable for a very long time. And there are some businesses where it's harder to be unethical because of the precision of what you're delivering in your contracts. You have to honor your contracts. You have to provide a manufactured product to somebody. And you're not dealing with these headwinds that I say, at least I have in the car business, and a lot of other businesses have too. And the thing that this Effie Award does for us, it validates my process by somebody else who's actually gone through, and I tell you, this process that we have to go through to get to get to be a finalist and finally a winner is involved. I mean, they really get their hands dirty looking at what you're doing and validating that what you're saying is really what you're saying, and the point that an employee might be able to hoodwink you or whatever, but there's a ring of truth. There's a ring of truth when you go and you talk to somebody and they tell you what their experiences are and what they've been told at their place of employment. Don't you agree, Alan?
Totally. But I want to shift to Bill Pollack, because before we went on the air, we talked a little bit about the bidding process and where ethics comes into that. And Bill, would you just review that again? I thought it was important about the low bid and what the impact is. I mean, by the way, if you go to Dom Genova and he treats you unethically, you get a bad deal and you're unhappy and you spread the word. If you go to Bill Pollack and you've been treated unethically, you might have a factory that's going to fall down.
Right. Right. Well, one of the things I want to say, and we're talking long and hard about ethics today, but really, ethics doesn't exist all by itself. Every company has a culture, and the culture is made up of a lot of different attributes. For example, we focus heavily on safety because we want people to be safe in a workplace. You're working in a confined space, you're working with high power, you're working with, you know, working on high levels with construction and so forth. So there's safety, but there's quality that you want to have in your product and your services. We want to have a wellness program so that we educate and empower our employees to eat better and to exercise more and to have a better lifestyle. So ethics is just one of the pieces that builds on the building blocks of how you do things. And our mantra is not unlike Dom's, that we want to build relationships with clients so that they're sustainable and they come back to us over and over and over again. And that's one of the things we were talking about before we started, is that if you're in a bidding process and they always pick the low bidder and they don't view any of the other attributes that you bring to the table, and all it is low bidder, then you're, if you're the low bidder every time, you're obligated to do something a little less in order to bring your price in. And after a while, you start losing pride in what you're doing, because you have to take so many shortcuts in order to continually come in at the lowest possible price. So we try hard to find relationships with clients where they don't just pick the low bidder. They may go out for bids, but they might pick somebody who's in the middle or someplace, because they're looking for value, not just price. And ethics, I think, ties into that. Yeah, ethics brings value, not just cheapest, and cheapest isn't always best.
Before I get back to the phones, Dom, you wanted to jump in as well?
Well, yeah, the only thing I want to say, you know, to Bill's point, is if you come to me, we're on to you'll get a bad deal. But, you know, there's the other side of my business there, too. You know, the car dealership is new, used, service, and parts. And service, there are certainly a number of people that are not using the highest quality parts or don't train their mechanics the way they should train their mechanics. And this is all into the venue of ethics too. I mean, when you put a part on somebody's car, is it the cheapest part you can get because you want to save money, or is it a quality part that you know that is going to last for as long as it should last?
Let me get back to the phones. This is Pete in Rochester. Thanks for calling, Pete.
Good afternoon. One would think that business would like to have the most efficient, effective healthcare system possible. I would suggest a New York State Health Department study that compared four healthcare plans. One was a universal single-payer system for the state, which would result in something, if I remember correctly, it was $20 or $28 billion of savings annually. How is this possible? Simply by cutting out the middleman. Health insurance companies add no value to your health. They take your premiums and they profit from denying access or payment for the services that you contract for. What's your position on a single payer healthcare system for New York State, which would save us money, insure everybody, and increase the standard and quality of health for all of our citizens?
Thank you, Pete. Alan gets to start.
Well, that happens to be my business, Pete. I'm in the employee benefits business, and I happen to agree with the fact that cutting out the middleman, which happens to be me, by the way, I do make commission selling health insurance, but I happen to agree with it. You know, in the Western world, we are the only Western industrialized nation that doesn't have single payer health care. Our costs are double the next highest, and our results are in the middle of the pack. To me, that's pretty simple. However, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about ethical behavior. And
well, I will give you this, Alan. Since you sort of refer to yourself as what Pete described as the middleman, I think it's pretty ethical to say that you are the middleman, and you would cut yourself out if you could.
I would. I think it's I'm interested in the bigger picture, and I think we can have a more effective healthcare system, and that benefits all of us. And it helps Dom and Bill run more efficient and profitable companies and have healthier employees, and it's a good thing.
And you could find something else to be very successful at after you moved on.
Thank you, Bill.
I will also tell you, Pete, that we're going to focus some hours on this program in the coming weeks on the question of what it would take to change the healthcare systems, whether we're going to see change affected at a state level like we're seeing in Vermont and other places. So that's in the works and that's coming. But I agree. I mean, I think it's an important discussion, and we'll have it at length on a different day. We have a question from a listener who writes to me about benefit corporations. He says NPR did a great article on what benefit corporations are and business ethics. Now, obviously, companies exist because they still have to make money. I mean, if you make no money, you don't exist as a company. But NPR did a piece on benefit corporations as what they're called. A corporation, according to NPR, again, some companies are signing a deal promising to create not only profit but also a tangible benefit to society and the environment. They're called benefit corporations, and their movement has caught the ear of lawmakers across the country, and he's wondering if we've heard about that in Western New York at all. Alan?
I haven't, but it sounds a little bit like a movement that I am familiar with called conscious capitalism, which is a movement that really kind of ties into what Bill Pollack said earlier, that ethics is just one piece of the kind of culture you want to create at a company. It includes safety and care for the environment, care for the community. So I know that the conscious capitalism movement is coming along, and I do want to put in a little shameless plug that the Business Ethics Foundation and Conscious Capitalism are sponsoring a seminar on October 30th where Bill Benner from Washington, D.C. is going to come and talk about trust and ethics in public corporations, including government and law enforcement agencies, which is a very timely topic with some of the things that are going on around the country. So that's as close as I know about benefit corporations.
Well, we'll revisit that on this program then in about a month as we get closer then.
Thank you.
And I think that'll be a good chance to continue the conversation. A couple questions from online before we get right back to the phones. A listener wants to know if the treatment of female customers has changed in the various businesses that are represented on the program today. I'll start with Bill Pollack. Has it changed in all over 30 years, do you?
Well, I mean, we have corporate customers, so I guess if we're looking at female customers, it's, you know, how many women
female
are now a
yep.
CEO of yep. Xerox or CEO of someplace else, and how many purchasing agents are women. And the truth is, of course, women in technology have at least increased. One of the things Alan was talking about, there are three vice presidents at Optimation, and they're all women. That's by pure happenstance. We weren't trying to make that happen. They were just the best qualified people. So I suppose, in a way, things must have changed. Otherwise, that wouldn't have happened. But I think the world is shifting, and I think overall, probably our perspective on women has changed as well.
What do you think, Dom?
Yeah, I really can't speak to that. I had three sisters and I have two daughters, and it was never my business was ever set up like there was one way we had to treat somebody and treat somebody else. Everybody gets treated equally.
But the stories are legend, car repair, dealing, that women are often preyed upon assumed to be less knowledgeable.
Yeah, I've been in the business since 1977. I mean, you think about what the culture was back then. I mean, you look at things have changed over the 30, 40 years. You know, of course, I think. It's like anybody says, you know, things have gotten better. They're not where they should be, probably, but they've gotten a lot better. And women have become an incredible buying force. As a matter of fact, women are making more car purchases and decisions about car purchases now than they ever have. I mean, it's really quite a different business than it used to be. You know, years ago, we said that you bought a car for one of a number of reasons. They use the words cause, C-A-U-S-E-D, comfort, appearance, utility, economy, and dependability. And now what's in there is the buying process. I mean, think about this. The Apple store doesn't have a sale, right? I mean, you go to the Apple store because you like the Apple. Chipotle doesn't have a dollar menu. Okay, and Wegmans is cool. I mean, you go to Wegmans, I don't know what the prices are good, but you don't go to Wegmans because you're saying, oh, I got a coupon, because you like going there. So the buying process, all told, for men and women, has become a factor in your purchasing of cars, and it wasn't like that years ago. Years ago, it was just a hard-nosed negotiation.
Let me get back to the phones. This is John in Rochester. John, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Evan. I just want to make a comment on the single-payer system. I think, theoretically, a single-payer system's great. But remember, the federal and state government's going to run it, and what have they done efficiently when you look at an $18 trillion national debt? And I just think to have the federal government or state government involved with a single-payer system would be suicide, financial suicide.
Thanks for the call, John. And again, I will say that we will definitely revisit this on a different day. But I think Bill and Dom really want to talk more single payer. I think that's what they came for. That's really what they really want to do. No, I think it's a very legitimate conversation, and we will certainly have that going forward here. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the EFES, the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation handed out the EFES last week, and Dom Geneva from Genesee Valley Motors is here. Bill Pollack of Optimation Technology is here. A couple of local companies on the lists of finalists. Genesee Valley a winner, and I know you also honor students as well. And I want to ask you, Alan, how you decide where to reach out when it comes to students, because It's one thing for students to graduate and get right into the business world. Earlier this year, I had an author named Kevin Roos on who wrote a book about young students going straight to Wall Street and in a year, you know, being trained to become just engines of profit. And I'm not saying that's a positive or negative, that's just an observation. Whereas you found, and you sort of highlight and honor students who are already thinking about not just successful businesses making money, but in a way that is beneficial to whatever position they end up in, whether it's an employee, management, et cetera.
We, as part of our program from inception, have been giving scholarships to students at local business schools. We started with St. John Fisher and then RIT, and now this year we've added Brockport and Nazareth, and Roberts Wesleyan will be among those schools next year. And we also give a scholarship to a junior achievement person. And our belief was, and I think everyone in the psychological field will say, that these cultures, values, and beliefs are set early in life. If you're going to try and change someone's view on ethics and values when they're in their mid-20s, you've got a tough uphill sled. But if you do that when they're younger, you've got a much better chance. So that when they come out of school and take that first job, they look at Wall Street and say, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't care how much money you're going to pay me. So we think it's important for the education, and each school handles it their own way. Some of them have an ethics course that the young people take. Some of them have ethics built into all of their courses. In each case, we ask them to write an essay, which the schools judge. We don't make that judgment. And we then celebrate that by giving the student a scholarship. And this year, we're going to start a thing called the Rabeff Scholars Program, where we're going to gather those young people together, have a think tank with them, and talk about some ethical dilemmas, and then publish the results of that, which we think will be very positive.
And if you could, because we couldn't have all of the companies who were honored by Rabeff this year here, can you give us the list of the finalists who were represented?
I hope so.
Uh-oh.
Let's see how good my memory is.
I'm challenging you now.
The winner of the small category was Rainbow Restoration. The winner of the large category was Iberdrola. We know them as RG&E, perhaps. Rochester Rotary was a finalist.
Heritage Christian.
Heritage Christian, thank you, Bill, was a finalist. And I'm missing one. Sorry.
Wow, look at you. Very unethical not to have the list in front of you, Alan. But people can find it where?
Yeah, it's on our website, rochesterbusinessethics.com. And on that website are not only the names,
Rotary,
but the videos.
Yeah, you got Rotary, yeah.
Oh, you got Rotary.
The
I'm
videos
sorry.
That we shoot of each of them, which are very telling. And I think we'll give you a lot of information and a real sense of what is the ethical culture at these seven finalists.
And we had a listener online asking if we could one more time go over, heard mention of a delivery bump. So Dom, there's real fascination with the way car dealing, sort of where this, how the sausage gets made. What's a delivery bump?
A delivery bump is when you go and you make a deal on a car, and when then you go to pick it up, it's something different than you expected. And there's a lot of times when it's actually done on purpose. Oh, your payment was 430? No, it was 450. Now you take that $20 a month and you think it's just a clerical error. The salesperson didn't. No, sometimes it's on purpose. And if you have a 60-month note, that's an extra $1,200 that they're getting from you. Now, I had a customer just yesterday who came in who said, well, you know, I got this car, and it's supposed to have the seats in the middle that fold down, and it doesn't have the seats in the middle that fold down. He bought it 2 years ago. I said, well, where's your window sticker? He says, well, they didn't give me the window sticker. Ah, maybe they didn't give you the window sticker because they knew it didn't have the seats that folded down. If you had the window sticker, you would have noticed that, and you wouldn't have taken delivery of the car. Sometimes it is cognizant on a dealer's part that they give you a deal, and then when you get there and they take the inspection sticker off your car and they take the registration off your car, the deal when you sit down in front of the salesperson isn't exactly what you agreed on. That's a delivery bump. You can see that on my car buying IQ test.
Quickly, I apologize to the folks at Harbeck Incorporated in Ontario County, who were one of our under finalists.
Very good. Look, Alan, you saved it before the end of the hour. Well done. Final thoughts.
It's a Hail Mary.
Final thoughts with Bill Pollack as the CEO of Optimation Technology. You said around 400 employees, Bill, is that right?
That's correct.
How do you approach it as the CEO? Not every employee is going to come in every day, but do you generally try to keep the door open when people have concerns, questions, complaints?
Absolutely. I try to be available to anyone who wants to talk, and they're very respectful of my time. but I think most of them know that if they have something they want to talk about, I want to listen, and we try to keep the organization very flat. So there's a culture where none of the intermediate managers would feel offended if somebody who worked for them went around them and came to me, because it's not going around them. We're all one big team, and we work together, and I like to know everybody by name and face and come to see them when I can.
Dom Genova, have you ever had an employee come in like Kramer during Festivus and said, "I got a real problem with you, pal"?
Yeah, I'm not going to mention that one. He's still working there. Yeah.
Do you try to keep an open door?
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, the hope that you have is that somebody's not talking about the color of the curtains and they really have a legitimate thing to say. But no, absolutely. I mean, I work 6 days a week. I love the business. I love talking to people. I love customers. I love the fact that I'm able to fulfill what I think I was supposed to do in my life, which is really great.
Dom Genova from Genesee Valley Motors, nice to talk to you here. Congratulations on your Effie Award.
Why, thank you very much.
Bill Pollack, nice to talk to you from Optimation Technology. Congratulations on the work of your company.
Thank you.
And Alan Ziegler from the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation. You know, so many interesting things to talk about. And can you come back and soon and talk about, because you talked about conscious capitalism. Let's continue the conversation on that soon.
We'd love to do that. Thanks, Evan.
All right, let's do that. And congratulations on the work that your organization does, Alan.
Thank you.
Short break and more with you next on Member Supported Public Radio.